Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham. Today we're talking about David Attenborough's newest film on climate change, our thoughts on the film itself and the points it was making. And then in the main section, we're going to brighten your day with an in-depth chat about death. It's the thing that societally we don't often talk about, but as Christians, how do we feel about death? And what does the Bible have to say about it? So enjoy the podcast, and I'll catch you on the other side.
I'm Graham Nichols.
I'm Mark Pentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. I nearly tripped up on the bit that I say every single week. How's it going, gents? You doing okay?
I'm doing all right, I think. Thanks, Josh. Yeah, you know, it's one of those fun weeks, but yeah, it's all good.
I'm okay. I managed to pull my back out for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah, you said on Sunday morning. I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you how you did it.
I think I did it lifting grandchildren up to great heights above my head. And although it didn't go then, I think it went later because I'd done something to it earlier.
So I see.
Keeps you humble though, and it means I've now got like a connection point with Mark. I didn't have any before.
That's true. The back pain pastors.
Yeah, that's it.
The analgesic pastors.
Yeah.
We have pain, we take away pain. How about that?
Wow, interesting.
Sunday roundup show. Did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's roundup time. What do you know?
Yeah, Sunday morning we had another look at Job, and I suppose what struck out to me was the relationship of Job being mocked to Jesus being mocked, but particularly when he looks back on his past life, he feels the pain and sadness of intimacy with God lost, and I thought it was really interesting to kind of connect that with the whole human race and the loss of intimacy with God and that homesickness which is only satisfied in Christ. So I thought it was good to be able to kind of work through that. And I think it's making us really appreciate the kind of richness of Job, that it's not just a great story about God and Satan and the battle, but it gives us so many insights at so many different levels. So I thought it was...
But actually, in the context, you know, that whole suffering and in pain, the longing for home is intensified. And actually that's part of what suffering and pain and trial does now, particularly for the believer. It makes us long for that home, for that Revelation 21 picture of the new heavens, new earth, no more pain, the intimacy of God himself wiping our tears. So I just think that those connections are just super helpful for us to think about.
If you liked it, leave a review.
For the last couple of weeks, there's been a documentary by David Attenborough trending on Netflix. It's been like top 10 for quite a while. I think it's called A Life on Our Planet. So David Attenborough, A Life on Our Planet. And it's essentially like a biographical, is that right? Or autobiographical? I never get it right.
Autobiographical, yeah.
It's almost like his final memoir. That's how it came across to me. Like he was almost saying, this is it. This is my final, the last dance.
Is he literally just sitting there looking at the camera talking?
Well, no.
There's no one else interviewing him. It's just him.
It's just him. But he still does quite a few location things. For example, he starts in Chernobyl and finishes in Chernobyl. Yeah. And essentially, just to summarise what it's about, like, I thought a good line that he said that summarised the actual doc was, we need to learn how to be a part of nature rather than apart from nature. And it's essentially a story about how we are damaging the environment, how it's the biggest threat to the human race for the future, and how we need to make real changes now to prevent the irreversible effects of climate change. Graham, what thoughts did you have initially when you watched it?
I thought it was great to see all the old footage, because he reviewed kind of different programs he'd done since the 60s and 70s right the way through.
Did he take you back to your childhood, Graham?
Well, yeah, something like that. Yeah, well, he was a figure that's been like through the whole of my life, you know, like my mum or something.
Yeah.
In that he's always been there, you know, he's always been around. And so it was good for that. I think he makes the case pretty well for environmental damage. You know, he demonstrates where there is sort of clearer environmental damage. I think you really want to support him and agree with him on the good stewards point. Mm. And as Christians, we can be so keen to sort of critique, and it's good to critique some of his thoughts, but that you don't kind of take the responsibility. I think what was weird about it was, for an evolutionist, someone who's, you know, really committed to evolution, he ends up with some very Christian conclusions. One, about halfway through, I think, he says something like, humans are special, we're unique amongst the whole of the animal kingdom because of our ability to sort of imagine the future. And that's a very Christian anthropology, you know, idea of what it is to be human. And the other Christian thing he says is that we're responsible for the earth. You know, he doesn't place the responsibility for environmental damage on, you know, cows that eat too much grass, you know, or deforest, or on any other animal. He places it all on us, which is absolutely fascinating, because that's a Christian worldview to make us responsible. So I thought it was both challenging, but also you could see sort of how he'd inherited a Christian worldview, but didn't really accept that.
What did you make of it, Josh?
For me, I felt the whole way through when I watched it, and often, because often he does tag quite a bit of environmental stuff on the end of all his docs, right? His planet Earth and life and things. And whenever I see those, I have a similar feeling, which is that I do agree completely with you, Graham, and like I kind of appreciate being reminded of the dangers and things. But I often think that I feel helpless in some ways when you think about the scale of the problem. And that makes me reflect on the heart of the issue, which I think comes down to sort of capitalism and greed, right? So when I'm watching it, I'm sort of thinking, I'm seeing these, because the cinematography is insane, right? It's absolutely beautifully shot, like amazing to watch. But you, as I watch it, I'm sort of sitting there thinking, I'm so far removed from the beauty and the majesty that I'm seeing on the screen in front of me. And so is everybody else on my road and in my town that's watching this, right? I'm not in those places like you, David. I'm not in those places to see this stuff. I can't connect to it effectively enough to want to do anything about it in my everyday life. Do you know what I mean? And so to me, it's almost like this thing of idyllic beauty versus the real adult world, where it's like I'm waking up in the morning, I'm having some cereal, I'm getting in my car that I'm paying monthly for and it's tough to pay for. I'm driving down a road smothered in traffic to an office block I don't really like to work for somebody to make them rich. And then I come home at night, 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, and I just want to have a bit of steak and then go to bed. Yeah. And it's like he's asking people to sort of forego their small pleasures in life, you know, sacrifice for future generations, whilst at the same time there's these huge businesses who are continuing to make profit unimpeded, you know, using their labour and to the detriment of the environment. That is clear. And I just think it's almost like I want to say to him through the screen, yeah, stop telling me and start telling the big businesses who need to really change to make the differences. Do you know what I mean? That's one of the things I think. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think he greatly benefits from capitalism. That's the thing, though. The whole thing that's made his career is global travel, global communication, the technology of recording, filming, distributing information. So, you know, in a weird way, the technologically advanced world that he's critiquing, you know, because he thinks we should be living like some sort of primitive tribe that, you know, lives sustainably, which is basically, you know, one of the examples he gives in the programme. He's not living like that. He's actually jetting around the world making documentaries and, you know, spending hours and hours and money and electricity and everything, you know, trying to film a mating whale or something, you know. So it's a weird thing, isn't it, that in order to try and make his message, he's actually supporting the capitalist entertainment-based industry. And people are, I think it's what you might call nature porn. You know, people people actually feast on this stuff because they do love the beauty and everything, but it's not the same as being there, like you say. So I've got a lot of sympathy with what you say.
Yeah. But at the same time, you would agree with his message, though, wouldn't you both? As in, like, I haven't watched it, but from what you guys have said, you know, there is a good stewarding point. So he... Although his argument is rooted in evolution, what he's arguing for is, in one sense, a biblical, and we can see how we root that in God creating us, made in his image, making us his, you know, rulers, subduers, to be good stewards. So we may not agree with how he's interpreting the information in terms of where it's rooted in evolution, but we're not going to disagree with we should be good stewards.
No way. Even for me, like watching it, you know, we've done podcasts on things like evolution. I know there'll be plenty of Christians who think evolution is a viable option. So I don't think even, I don't have a problem with that so much. I think the thing is, it just becomes like a thing where if it's so obvious what we need to do, it's so obvious, which is to revert and invest in sustainable energy, then why aren't we doing it? And I think the answer to that question is because somebody is making profit from the old system. Somebody is making money. That's why it's not happening. And so you end up thinking, well, you know, if I need to have solar panels on my house, stop charging a premium for people to have solar panels. Just make it a thing. Just make that the thing. So I end up...
But I think I think another interesting thing, though, is the why should mm-hmm. we? And the weakness of his argument is his why is something like, you know, so we don't ruin the world for ourselves. Yeah. He doesn't have a why of because we're responsible as human beings put in charge of the yeah. earth. And I think that's why his argument is weak, because, you know, the great capitalists are always kind of weighing up and saying, well, I don't have to do this because I'm not responsible for sure. the world, and I'll make money and we'll just do the minimum we have to do.
A good observation,
And that's the only way we'll ever be motivated, isn't it? The only reason I will be motivated is to honour God and do what is right by him, because naturally I am selfish, because the reason the big corporates are big corporates is because I want the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a circle, isn't it? It's not like they're pumping it out and no one's buying it.
Yeah,
we could all refuse to buy it, but we all love it.
Yeah.
We want the new tech. We want the high spec. We want the comfortable life. Therefore, they pump it and make money out of it, and... You know, that's how it is.
Yeah.
But that's why the motivation doesn't... That's why, I guess, you know, goes against what we're thinking and wanting, because at the end of the day, you need a bigger view and a bigger motive to want to be good stewards that is beyond just a sustainable planet.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
Because I'm too selfish in and of myself.
Yeah. And what do you think, sort of to finish that off, what do you think the role of the church is in that? Because we've spoken about this before... just off air, I know that I have asked one or both of you about the question of the environment and what we should be doing about it. And I've made perhaps poor links to the kind of slave trade of the past, where the church saw a social injustice going on that was to the detriment of the well-being of human beings and acted to stop it and change it decisively. You know, it was very involved in that change, that societal change. What about climate change? I don't see massively the church looking at climate change and being like, this is a existential threat. This is something that is threatening, not to me right now, but to the future generations who I ought to care about. Should we be doing something more actively to be involved in that?
I think it's hard because we don't have a platform, because the church's voice, you know, we're not heard on the issue of abortion. We're not heard on the issue of church closure or opening. So during COVID, so it's really hard to say, well, OK, I've got a view on this. Let's have a voice. You know, the Archbishop of Canterbury pops up and says something about it every now and then. But, you know, even he's hardly got a voice. So I think even if we said we want to do more, it's hard to work out what. I think encouraging Christians to look carefully at environmental policies and political parties is good, and to lobby political parties to say, you know, we think you should be trying to, you know, create sustainable development. But I suppose we're wary of it because there's a kind of sense that that's how salvation comes, that, you know, somehow you're going to save the world by, you know, being more sustainable. And I think Christians are wary of that, and because it's much more complex than that. And, you know, there was Brian May, the lead guitarist of Queen. He recently describes Christians as a parasite on the earth, like we shouldn't be there. It's to do with hedgehogs and deforesting somewhere near where he lives, and he was kind of suggesting that nature deserves to live there and humans don't. So there's a whole ideology that comes with environmentalism that I think we shy away from, so probably don't get involved because of that, but I'm sure we could do better.
Well, and I think there is, I think that theologically as well, there is just that sense of a priority, which is to proclaim the gospel. As we proclaim the gospel, that changes hearts. As people's hearts are changed, they desire to not be as selfish, therefore you're going to get good stewards. So you could argue the way in which you do it is by preaching the gospel. I think there is a sense, Romans 8, that the world is fallen and creation is groaning for the new age to come. So there is a sense whereby the ultimate restoration of this planet is not in what I do now, but ultimately in what Christ will do when he comes again. And so there's a looking out to that. But at the same time, we want to be thinking about, OK, how do I encourage good stewardship now? Whether that, you know, I don't think it's the priority of the church, but it's certainly part of our teaching application at times. And, you know, right to encourage believers to take a stand where they can and do what they can in lobbying and all that necessarily.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thanks, guys. If you watch the show, listeners, and you had thoughts on it as well, then please do email us your thoughts, because we'd like to hear what you thought of the show.
I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left.
Here's a question for both you two guys. Do you ever contemplate your own death? Do you ever imagine your own death? Do you ever think about your own death? What about you, Josh?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
A lot?
I don't know. I don't know if a lot, but I think I yeah, I think I'm a bit hung up on death, is the truth. I do think I think I am a bit scared of it, and I think it's something that I actually need to work through. I think I'm concerned about it for family members, and I'm concerned about it for myself. And a lot of that has to do with sort of legacy and things as well, which is I've got to untangle what that means for me and things like that. So yeah, I do think about it.
Interesting.
Mark?
I could develop a lot of that, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, let's move on swiftly.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I think about huge amounts. I think that, you know, like probably most, you wonder, you know, how long you got left, those kind of questions, you know, how will you die? I don't think I'm particularly hung up. I think I'm more concerned when I think about death of being those left behind than I am with myself, in that sense.
I think I do think about death sometimes. I think it depends on whether I'm feeling ill at the time or whether I'm close to people feeling ill. And I think the interesting thing about COVID has been it's got us a lot more interested in death in a weird way, because certainly in the early days we're looking at death statistics and starting again a little bit now.
Yeah.
And I think people who were, like, you know, famous preachers in the 17th and 18th centuries and before then, death was all around them in a way that it isn't now. For us, it's out in hospitals mostly, or in care homes, and it's a sort of relatives, and it's an event that we connect with and we mourn over, and then we get on with our lives again.
Yeah.
Whereas I think when you've got sort of pestilence and plague and various untreatable diseases that are all around you, like they would have been 100 years ago, then you're thinking about death much more. So I think that's been an interesting thing, and so we thought it'd be good just to talk about it for a few minutes. I think it's good to think about death, but not too much, and never without a biblical view of it. So I think it is good to think about death a bit.
Well, okay, build on that then. So why do you think it is good to have some reflection on death?
Well, I think it's good to have reflection on death because it happens. So it's like a major event in all of our lives that's going to happen. So it would be pretty stupid to not be ready and mindful of something that's absolutely certain, unless Jesus comes again, to happen. So, you know, as much as you might think about getting married or learning how to drive or something else, you know, the events that might or might not happen in your life, then this one will definitely happen. So you need to make sure you've got your thoughts lined up about it. So I think it's worth thinking about it for that reason. Obviously, the Bible talks a lot about death. A lot of people die.
Yeah.
In the Bible, and
most of them,
I think all people don't. I can't think
of
a couple.
A lot of people I suppose a lot of deaths are described. That's what I should have better said. You know, of course, you've got
Enoch.
Enoch was. I was trying to think of Moses, who may not have died, but it's a little bit unclear, isn't it?
Or Elijah, I think, would be another one taken up in the chariot.
Yeah, so I think a lot was probably, 99.999% of people dying in the Bible.
Yeah.
So the Bible talks about it, and obviously the Bible gives a whole narrative, which we're not going to talk about now, but, you know, the whole narrative of death comes as part of the curse. The curse is removed by Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection and victory over death. So we can face death with hope, but I think, having understood the gospel, we don't then just park it and say, okay, we've done death. Let's not think about it anymore. I think there are more reasons to start thinking about death. I can carry on talking about them, or you could
Wondering about just whether we're primarily talking about Christians or non-Christians, because I was thinking that I think probably Christians are a group of people who have or do think about death perhaps more often or more readily, because, you know, Christ on the cross and salvation is the great remedy for the great tragedy of life, isn't it? Because death is the tragedy of life, and it seems like all, you know, everything we do in life is set in the context of finitude, like this yeah. will end, everything we do. Yeah. But I sometimes get the feeling that people who perhaps aren't Christians, who I speak to, just don't have that sort of view of death, or they don't spend much, they try to avoid thinking about it, I would say, because yeah. it is just the great nothingness, and there's nothing to say about it, there is no hope, so you just try to ignore it. Do you think that's a fair sort of thing to say?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because when you're preaching about death, you can tell with some non-Christians, when you talk, chat with them other times, that you're, as a preacher, you're absolutely right, Christians have thought a reasonable amount about death and understand the gospel as the defeat of death through Christ, and you can tell that the people listening sometimes just don't have that interest because they haven't thought about death, so they don't think victory over death is such a big deal. They would do if they thought about it deeply, but they haven't sort of got the railway tracks or the furrows of a plough that kind of they immediately mean they know where to go with it, because they haven't contemplated much. So I think it's a really good point, and that's also why we should talk about it.
And they don't want to talk about it, do they? Because you've got no solution, so you might as well just get on with life and enjoy life now, because hey, you know, life will end. And I think that, you know, the Christian is able to, because the sting has been removed, and therefore we can fear it in terms of how we might die, but we're not fearing what will be next. In fact, for many, it begins to become our hope. It becomes our joy. And it does transform how we think about it. You know, we're having as a family to contemplate, you know, my mother, who has Alzheimer's, she's in the going down into the last steps. You know, the reality is we're talking, you know, we're grieving and death, but there is hope. And that transforms it, it really does. For me, I'm not kind of having to think about her death in a way that will be it, I'll never see her again. Because that's, and actually there's a sense of me where I'm longing, you know, there where she will be in her right mind rather than in the confused and, you know, sorry way that she is now, really. So
how would you cope with it, Mark, if you weren't a believer, do you think, and you didn't have that hope of ever seeing her again?
Well, I think it would then have a greater finality, which I think would make these years much harder because the tragedy with Alzheimer's is that you kind of lose them. You know, mum's not mum in many ways. She is mum. She's still got dignity and value as one made in the image of God, but she's not behaving in the way of my mother anymore. And you are grieving that, and that's a slow grief, but I think if you had the finality, the pain would be much more intense. So I know for my siblings who are not believers, it's a very different, so they believe mum will go in heaven, they're not sure they will see her in that sense themselves, or at least one wouldn't talk in that way. So you're kind of, it brings a different, you kind of push it away in a very different way, whereas I feel I can talk about and engage with it in a way that they can't. They just don't want to, because it's too, for them it's final.
It's too
whereas
much.
For me, I can talk about actually seeing it's better for her to die. Not that you want that, but you can see it's better for her.
Sure.
And you have that hope. I have that picture of Mark 5 where Jesus cures the man with demonics, not that she has that, but he's then sitting in his right mind, and that to me is a great hope, to know that when she dies she'll be sitting in her right mind with Christ, and I'll see her again. So it does transform it. It brings hope. You can grieve in that way,
and like you do see you know, well-meaning but sort of fumbling attempts at that hope in phrases like rest in peace, right, which we see all the time when somebody dies, and you just, as a Christian, I read that and I think, what on earth do you mean? What does that mean? And it's almost, you know, it is a fumbling attempt to reach after some kind of hope, I suppose.
Or the poems that are in the room next door, or the looking down. And of course, you understand why people, you know, because although Dawkins and the whole lot like to talk about death, and you're kind of, that's the end, and you're just, you know, in effect, worm food. Actually, when it comes to it, no one wants to think that.
No.
You know, when you get to the grieving point, no one actually wants to go, my loved one's just worm food. They want to go, there's something more, there's something else, because we're made to. And that's why actually talking about death is so important, because it shapes how we view life now.
Yeah.
Sorry, we've gone off the script.
No, it's all good. I was at the death of my father at his bedside when he actually died, breathed his last breath. And that was really sad, because I loved him a lot, but it was also poignant and kind of made you think about the reality that his body stopped working. And my mum came back. She unfortunately, or maybe in my dad's intent, wasn't actually at his bedside when he died. So my mum had gone for a coffee or something. She came back and she immediately said, "Oh, he's with Jesus." And I'm sitting there thinking, "Is he? Oh yeah, good point. Stop being sad." But the kind of the reality pressing in is a good thing. So I mean, I'm not saying everyone has to go and visit people in the throes of dying, but the experience is definitely good to at least think about it and think through the thought process and what you actually believe. For that reason, and I think, as well as all the things you said, I think just an urgency in evangelism. So because you really believe the only hope is Christ, thinking about death kind of speeds you up a little bit, gives you a little bit of a kind of more of a spring in your step in speaking about the gospel, because the gospel is great, because death is real and the sting of death is removed by the gospel and by the cross. That's what Paul talks about in Corinthians. So you have to kind of think about it to think, oh yeah, death is really miserable. So if you're spending your whole life not thinking about it, you won't have the same conviction when you're trying to explain to other people that it's really important. And I think it's like a lot of things to do with becoming a Christian. It's one of the points to make. It's not the only point. You know, you don't go around saying to everyone, you're going to die, and so you need the gospel. There are things to do with who we are as human beings and the love of God and relationship with God. So you don't just say it fixes your death problem, but it is part of the equation. And I think sometimes it's a part that we either don't say, or we say it kind of in preaching, but we're not really sort of engaging with it with conviction the rest of our lives.
And I think we're afraid to talk about it, aren't we? I think it's one of those taboo subjects. We don't really talk about death. And you see that when someone dies, we struggle to know what to say. You know, so we you know, people have the standard answers, but we struggle to really empathise or come alongside, because we feel awkward about it. Because now that's different again in the Christian circles, because I think there is a, you know, we talk about, you know, when we talk about hope, that doesn't mean it removes the sadness. Graham was, you know, helpful there just in terms of he was really sad when his dad died, and that it doesn't stop the sadness. You miss the individual, the person.
Yeah.
But there is hope, and we have language that we can talk about that actually I think the non-Christian struggles with, and I finds it hard to talk, which is why we then find it hard in society to talk about death. And actually I think, you know, going back, it was struck this reading John Newton over the summer, you know, they talk about death because it was such a reality for them, you know, infant mortality, they would lose children, so you're not kind of immune to it in the way that we are now. You know, it's all very, people die in hospitals now, that, you know, whereas they would have died in your home back then. You know, there's a kind of, we've sterilized death, whereas actually we need to be real about it. It is still the great enemy alongside Satan and sin that Christ has defeated. And, you know, we want to be talking about it in ways that are real and empathetic.
Yeah, I was at a conference, an online conference on Monday, and an evangelist called Michael Oates was talking about trying to use the COVID crisis, not in a crass way of saying, oh, there's lots of people going to die, are you ready to die? But just trying to enter in conversations with friends about, you know, isn't this quite frightening? This is quite unusual. You know, this is like plagues and pestilence in the past. You know, how does it make you feel? You know, what do you worry about? And what's your hope? You know, what do you hope in this? So it is a way in, as long as we're not too clumsy about it. It is a way in at the moment in having conversations with people, but not being in a hurry with those, which I probably would be at times.
And I think,
but actually trying to patiently work into it.
And people are fearful at the moment, and understandably. And so therefore, you know, we have a solution. So, you know, we're not loving people well if we're not talking about the thing that is the greatest threat that they face. It's love to talk about such difficult issues. It's unloving to not.
And when we sort of approach that with non-Christians or something, I'm just aware that you sort of don't want to usher somebody... I mean, somebody can't... Well, how when you think about how do you become a Christian, you don't necessarily become a Christian because you're afraid of death, right? I mean, that's is that a wrong motivation? That's where my head's going. It's like, I become a Christian because I'm presented with the person of Jesus and what he did for me on the cross, and I want to respond to that by giving him my life. And yes, he saves me from death, but that's almost a byproduct of salvation rather than the primary goal of me coming to Jesus. Yes or no?
Oh no, I think if you think about a young lady's testimony who got baptized a few weeks ago in our church, and one of the things she said, and she quoted me that in one of the courses she was on, she said something like, "You know, I'm interested to keep pursuing Christianity because I'm afraid of death."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, that's not the whole story, of course, but it's kind of a good start."
Yeah.
Because, you know, at least it gets you interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I always like to think of these kind of fanning into the gate, which is Christ, you know, to a doorway. But there's lots of different routes. If you imagine lots of lines, lots of spokes going in. And sometimes you start with a fear of death, and sometimes you start with an admiration for the life of Christ. And sometimes you start by being persuaded about there's a creator God. And sometimes you start just by feeling empty and broken. But actually, you all end up at the same point.
Yeah.
But the route... Sometimes the route by death is good,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a good way in.
Mm.
It's just you can't just leave it there. But if you think about the Philippian jailer, where you know, the guys are breaking out of the prison, and he says, "What must I do to be saved?" And you think, well, he was just scared and confused and thought, "This God must be amazing and great, and I can see these guys are really good guys because I've witnessed them, you know, being tried and imprisoned and singing hymns and everything else, and I want a piece of this." I don't think he'd really thought, you know, "I want a relationship with God through Christ, and that's the most important thing, and I'm not worried about death." I think he just thought, "I am so scared, I need to be saved," and it took time. So I think it's all right to, it's not, we don't preach for that, but I think it's all right as a possible route. Do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I agree. I was listening to something yesterday, and the guy, Winston Smith, was talking about John 9 and how people experience Christ before they then worship Christ. You know, so the blind man is healed by Christ, but he doesn't know who Jesus is. And then he's told, you know, he thinks he's a prophet, he's a Pharisee, and then Christ comes back to him and he then worships. And so sometimes it's just that way in, isn't it? I experience, oh, here's an answer to death, which is the way in for me to then worship Christ for who he is, because he's far greater than just a ticket to heaven. But ultimately, as Graham says, you know, there's different ways into it, and how we understand and come to see and behold Christ. And actually, I think you see that all the way through the Gospels. It's different connection points that start before they understand who he is and worship him.
Well, that's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in. If you have thoughts on anything that we've been talking about today, then email ordinary@cchh.org.uk. There won't be a podcast next week because it's half term, and since we don't batch record these anymore, there'll be rare occasions where we take a week off because one or more of us is on holiday or something. So no podcast next week, but we will be back in a couple of weeks' time. So have a good half term, and we'll see you next time.